Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Kirit Amin, the Chief Information Officer of the State Department's Bureau of Consular Affairs. Kirit, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, let's start with some basics, because I think everyone has a pretty good idea about the State Department, but I'm not sure if everyone has an idea of what the mission of the Bureau of Consular Affairs really is.
I think you are absolutely correct, Jason. The Bureau of Consular Affairs within the State Department has a very, very unique mission. It's a threefold mission. One, we issue visas all over the world. Second mission is we issue passports domestically as well as overseas if you are overseas. And the third and the most important mission, I feel, is serving Americans overseas. And that can run the gamut. You know, somebody as simple as, I lost my passport, so what do I do? Two, somebody might not realize, let's say you are an American resident overseas, a couple, and you have a child. We issue what you call the CRIBA, which is the consular record for birth abroad. That's really your...
Because you can't have a necessary birth certificate from America if you're in
Because you're
London.
Born overseas.
Exactly.
Right.
You're still an American citizen.
That's correct. And that's your, really, that's your legal document to say you're an American.
So I think what's interesting about that is not only are you supporting internally, meaning internal to the United States, but externally too. So that probably, you as the CIO, makes your job pretty difficult in some ways?
Absolutely, because we are talking, our presence is more overseas than is domestic. For example, I have some 30 locations domestic with our passport agencies, and we have the National Passport Center, National Visa Center. But bigger than that, I have 250-plus locations overseas.
Because we're talking about embassies, consulates, right?
Every embassy,
or even more.
We are present at every embassy and every consulate has a consular affairs section.
And the technology behind that to issue those notices of birth, to issue a new passport if you lose it, there's a technology behind all that that you get to play with.
We are totally automated today, okay? And that means more than the birth certificates or issuing passports, the bigger mission really is overseas issuing visas to all non-Americans who want to come to the U.S., whether it's a visitor, a student, a diplomat. It runs the whole spectrum, right?
So you as CIO, I mean, what is your role from, obviously you're supporting technology, you're providing vision, but talk specifically about what you're doing to make that support happen, to make those systems work.
It's not just that I provide a vision, but I also am responsible to build these systems, run them, and operate them. Right, you run the whole life cycle of IT for these systems that we support our mission of issuing visas, supporting Americans overseas, and issuing passports.
When you support those systems, do you have staff overseas? Are you doing it through a VPN? Are you kind of how does that all work? Because either your staff's huge, or you're doing a lot of work here, but you're working all hours of the night.
Well, that's a very good question. When it comes to the consular affairs, we, from a technology standpoint, do not have any resident IT people at our embassies or consulate. We are supported by our department, Office of Information Resource Management, and they have what we call IMOs, which is Information Management Officers. They support the whole embassy or the consulate. But all the systems within the consular sections are operated and run by us. We have now automated to the point that we really run them mostly from here, centrally. But if there is a physical hardware failure and stuff, then they help us out.
And that IRM is really where the main State Department CIO sits.
That is correct.
So that's where your connection comes in. Now, your staff itself, I know in terms of how your office is set up and your IT budget, can you talk a little bit about how many federal workers you have versus how many contractors you have? How big of an IT budget do you have? How does it all fit together?
We are in the process of kind of getting the ratio more the way it should be. Today, I have less than 50 government employees running this complex 270 locations worldwide operation, which is truly a 24/7, 365 operation, okay? And I can talk about the volumes a little bit if you want me to. Okay. We processed last year, for example, over nearly 9 million visas all over the world. We issued last year nearly 16 million passports. Okay. Now, as you know, with the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative for the land crossings, we are now issuing the what we call the passport cards. Okay. This is the latest in technology. They are with a chip in it. It has a RFID antenna that can be read at least 30 feet away when you are approaching a border. To do this, I have today, from a government standpoint, less than 50 people. Okay. My front office has now realized that. I've reorganized, and probably I'll be doubling my staff in the next year to 18 months.
You have been, said you've been in your job for about 2 years. So you were in industry before that. I want to get a little bit about your background later in the interview. But how has your job changed over that few years you've been in it? Especially since, as you mentioned, you have the Witty pass card, the passport card, you have e-passports came into being. I mean, there's a lot of change around what you specifically do versus maybe what other agencies have seen in the last, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. What are we? We are government. Consular affairs, as I said, is a very unique entity. Why? We are government, but yet we are a business. Last year, we generated nearly $2.8 billion. Visas cost money. Passports cost money. So we have to run this more like a business, right? Although we are government, we have to provide the service we are charging fees for, right? So on one hand, yes, we are a business. Therefore, we are a 24/7, 365, number one. Number two, now, if you are a business, then we have to run it like a business, okay? In other words, we have to be cost sensitive. And how do we get the best value from our contractors? Proper oversight, governance. And today, for example, new requirements come. Congress comes and says, okay, here is new legislation or a mandate coming. WHTI, the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, is a good example. And by the way, you're going to get it done by this date.
Yeah, it's great the way Congress does that, by the way.
But
you can't comment on it, but that's just the way it is.
but that's their job. I understand why. And then ours is to make it happen, right? And in this case, we have. Same thing with the electronic passports, right? And electronic passports is not just Congress or us telling, but it also is an international issue with the International Civil Aviation Organization, so that we are all following internationally the same standards.
So let me jump in real quick. You mentioned the fact that you generated $2.8 billion in revenue last year based on the fees around passports and passport cards and visas and stuff. Is your IT budget based on that revenue generation, or is it a combination of that revenue generation and appropriations from Congress? So when you have to upgrade systems or implement new services like the Witty card, are you paying for that through what?
Most of consular affairs, not just my CIO's shop, but most of consular affairs is funded out of fees for service. Very little is appropriated. Yet, and I think we still, more than half the money goes back to the Treasury.
Because then that probably makes your job even more difficult in many ways because, well, what if the number of visas are down? What if the number of people want passports are down? And you forecasted X, and then all of a sudden it's X minus Y.
Jason, boy, you are looking at it deep. Right now, because of the global economic recession and everything, guess what? The visa applications are down. The passport applications are down compared to last year. So now the revenue stream has definitely slowed down, right, and requires very quick adjustments. Therefore, I'm saying we are a business. We are relying on that revenue stream to support what we do. Yet we can't stop issuing visas or passports. My infrastructure is still there to do it. And that's the challenge, where how can I do more with the same dollars? And the way I can do that, and I can talk about, is modernize some of my old systems so that the dollar goes farther than it does today.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I definitely want to talk about how that decreased revenue stream is going to affect your priorities. But you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Kirit Amin, the CIO of the State Department's Bureau of Consular Affairs.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Kirit Amin, the CIO of the Bureau of Consular Affairs in the State Department. Now, before break, we were talking a lot about your revenue stream and how the global economic slowdown has affected you. How does that affect your priorities? Because I'm sure there's an upkeep, there's new systems that are needed when because we have new identification requirements. And how is this all affecting you?
It really affects tremendously that we have to shift on the fly some of our priorities. But then I look at it in two ways. One is what I call how to keep the fires burning. In other words, I have to keep issuing visas. We have to keep issuing visas, passports, serving Americans overseas. We cannot compromise that. A business doesn't compromise what we call your bread and butter, right? So we've got to keep that doing. So what we do is that's the first priority. We never compromise on that. So what does that do? What does that does is then we have to shuffle our modernization and other efforts around. Delay some, cancel some if that happens, you know. But we are very confident that this is just a kind of a spike that says, okay, this year the rent is down. I think it will come back and it's going to be there. So it might mean delay some of our priorities.
So let's talk about some of those priorities. What do you hope to get done over the next 6 to 9 months, especially if when budgets come back up? Because we know it will.
The priorities are really modernize our whole enterprise. If you look at when I came in, what we had very stovepiped systems. And that is because over the years, as things happened, they just did it for the specific application. For example, visas today. We have four stovepipe systems to do visas. And one would ask a question, why do I have four systems, right? So what we have done is we have embarked on, and we are right now building what we call our global visa system, which will be one system replacing four systems, which are really on older platforms, outdated, cannot scale, all of the above. Our officers have to deal with four different systems, you know, train them, if you look at all that cost and everything. So we are on a fast track on that one. We are not even compromising on that. The first phase of that will be built and being deployed early next summer. The second priority in same vein is, and we have broken up our mission into two, although we have threefold mission. But if you look at it at the bottom line, it's two missions. We have citizen services and non-citizen services. So the global visa system modernization that we are now embarked on is what I call my non-citizen services modernization. In parallel to that, we have embarked on right now what we are calling our GCS, Global Citizen Services Modernization. That will build one platform today for issuance and passports and serving Americans overseas, which are all separate platforms today. The third one, and the biggest one that we are doing, so we are building everything from an enterprise standpoint and know the stovepipe systems. And to build that enterprise, we probably today have some of the largest databases in the federal government. My visa database, which we call our Consular Consolidated Database, or CCD, is today about 38 terabytes and grows at the rate of 1 terabyte a month. In parallel to that, on the other side, I have a suite of databases on the passport side, the main one being the passport Peers database, which is the passport database, which is also about 28 terabytes and grows at a rate of 1 terabyte a month as well. Right now, I have a modernization effort, what I call database consolidation. It's going to be one massive data warehousing. And that combined will be 70 plus terabytes, growing at 2 terabytes a month. If we don't do that, what I say is that we're going to collapse under the weight of data, and we don't know what to do with it. These are the main modernization efforts going on. On top of that, what we are doing, it's easy to say, okay, now I built my database, massive, okay? On top of that, we are laying what, then when we build this data, and which would help us do all our management information reporting and stuff in a very hierarchical, graphical mode. Another example I'll give you, for example, is when I started looking at the architecture and I looked at 250-some locations overseas, we had the server architecture didn't make sense. When we looked at it and we re-architected it, we are in the process right now, and by end of August, I'll be done with it, is retiring nearly 600 servers across our architecture, completely enterprise removed, retired, completely gone. The cost savings is, one thing is the server hardware and the licensing of the software. The bigger one is that we used to send installers all over the world when they needed to be replaced. So just the cost of all that, okay, is now for a better use to modernize our systems rather than wasting. So we are doing a lots of parallel modernization efforts going on.
Well, I don't know where to start because it's all so interesting. But I think I'm going to start with the last thing you mentioned since that's the closest to being done. You're going to retire 600 servers across the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many do you have?
we have those 600 servers plus we have another 600 which are our primary and secondary servers supporting our mission.
So is it a one-for-one switch or a new?
No, those are being retired. The 600
correct.
Are going away.
So you had almost 1,200 at
that
one point.
That is correct.
And you're cutting by 50%.
50% out.
And now are you doing that through virtualization? Are you doing through?
Those I've just re-architected into those current servers so that I don't need. It just didn't make sense, architecturally speaking, that I didn't need. But in the past, they must have slapped those on front for whatever the reasons might have been.
So maybe of these 1,200 servers, they were only used at 15% capacity?
No, they had a function.
Okay.
What I've done is I've taken that function out of there and integrated into the other servers.
But I guess my thought process was there's a big move around cloud computing. There's a big move around virtualization. So I wasn't sure if you had 1,200 and now you're going to 600 because as you consolidate, you realized most of the servers are only 20% capacity. So maybe we only need half as many servers.
In this case, it was more of a functionality than the capacity issue. Okay. And that's why it was so easy to do it. Okay. In parallel to that, we have a tremendous virtualization effort going on. In fact, in collaboration with our Office of Information Resource Management at the our State Department CIO, we have embarked on consolidating the data centers. In fact, we have signed a contract to go commercial data center.
Oh, really?
And
when
most state-of-the-art in Culpeper, Virginia is the first one.
When did you sign that contract, roughly?
That contract was signed by our Office of Information Resource Management, I think earlier this year.
Okay, so that's...
And the first of the systems moving in, which you are about to ready to fire up, are ours.
So let me back up because that obviously the server one's interesting. These other modernization efforts are all in process. You've awarded contracts, you have vendors, or some of these, there's going to be kind of a modular contracting or piecemeal contracting, so maybe there's other contracts coming down the pike?
Oh, absolutely. What we are doing is we are restructuring some of our contracts as well because our missions are now changing in terms of how we go about doing it. I'm going looking at an enterprise rather than stovepipe systems. So in some instances, I'm going to integrate some of the contracts. In other instances, I'm going to break them apart where it makes sense. So the opportunities as far as the public-private is still there. In fact, more so.
Okay.
But in a different format.
Sure.
So all this that's going on, you're right. You know, some of them I'm doing it under my current contracts. Some of them is being new contracts. And some of them I'm just building requirements to go out and compete those.
Let's talk real quick about the visa system, because as you said, you have four systems. You're coming down to one. How's that going to work? Is it a, you know, you're taking a federated approach? Is it a single system that lives in one of your servers and everyone is going to connect to it? What's the thought around?
Everything we do currently, even now, is really centrally from here. We do not leave much data out at the post for a number of reasons, okay? Data is all central here in U.S., okay? As I said, and therefore, our data centers are really the heart of our systems. in a 24/7 environment, okay? For example, every visa applicant, we do 10 prints and facial from applicant, and then we take the check the fingerprints against DHS's IDENT and FBI's IAFIS databases, right? And the round trip, basically less than 15 minutes, goes back. So this whole infrastructure from our office of IRM, our servers, DHS, FBI, has to work.
We're going to have to take another break, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk more maybe about how you work with DHS and some other agencies. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Kirit Amin, the CIO of the Bureau of Consular Affairs in the State Department.
Listen to Federal News Radio 1500 AM throughout the day for the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Join the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Jane Norris, mornings from 6 to 10. In Depth with Francis Rose from 1 to 3, and The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, afternoons from 3 to 7. Find all the news you need 24/7 at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news. Now, tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Kirit Amin, the CIO of the Bureau of Consular Affairs in the State Department. Now, before break, Kirit, we were talking a whole lot about your priorities, and as I said, your plate is full. Let's talk a little bit about, you also mentioned, though, your work with DHS and how when someone applies for a visa, they get fingerprinted and iris scan, and that is checked against the terrorist watch list and assorted other databases. Is that the main way you're working with DHS, or are there several other steps that you are working with DHS, with Justice Department, with other agencies?
That's definitely lots of things we do right now with DHS and Justice and some of the intel agencies as well right now, and that is to check against some of the databases that they have. Okay, for example, I mentioned earlier, for the fingerprints, we do every applicant, visa applicant, is checked against the fingerprints for both the DHS's IDENT database as well as FBI's IAFIS database. Okay, without that, they cannot issue a visa.
And I'm sure you're going to be happy when they combine those eventually, right?
Oh, I hope so. One of these days.
It's happening. That's what I hear.
Yeah, but and you're right. Absolutely right. Because from a network standpoint, it's a problem because we cannot go directly to FBI, for example, from our telecom. It goes into DHS and from DHS. So if DHS is down, we can't go to FBI, right? And lots of times in the morning, I'll see the message come across. The images are not coming back. So that's a constant battle. So that would be, and that's part of what I think the collaboration within government would be very, very helpful. I think we have made some inroads. We have a long way to go.
Now, does your collaboration also beyond DHS and FBI on the fingerprint, does it also come with some of the other agencies? I mean, do you support the Defense Department? Do you support, for instance, FDA, for instance, has a office in China looking at, you know, certain drugs and food, or are you really, because of what you're focused on in terms of basically identity management in many
right.
ways, that's really where, that's the line.
Yeah, it is. We are people-centric. Everything we do is an individual-based, right? Whether you're using a passport, visa, or serving, touching that individual, right? So everything we do is that person-related. So our primary is obviously DHS and Justice. Also some of the intel agencies as well. Also something like Drug Enforcement Agency. There are records on some bad guys out there. And we are now, in fact, I spent some time yesterday at OMB as well as White House, and we are talking. And they have formed now what they call the Information Sharing Enterprise groups and say, okay, come on, what else are we not doing? And it might be something like we do with Social Security, for example. We check against their master death files to say, you come in, are applying for a passport with the Social Security number and stuff, and we check against you, say, wait a minute, this person is dead. what are you doing here? So that's the fraud side of it that we have to. So it's a whole, it plays across federal agencies, right? And I think we have come made inroads. I think we still can do a lot more.
Now, we are almost out of time, but I didn't want to let you go before talking a little bit about yourself. You were telling me some your interesting background. Give us a sense. You've only been at the State Department for about 2 years. Where did you work before that? How did that prepare you for your job now?
Oh, I think, my background is basically I have an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering, and I have an executive master's in technology management, right? When I was doing my engineering, lots of people were doing MBAs and stuff. I personally felt I'm a technical person, so I did not take the MBA route. I said, I want to do this executive master's in technology management. So that's really what I'm doing today, is managing technology to accomplish the mission. So I basically have been technical ever since I could remember. But my start in the federal government came in the mid-70s, after I immigrated to the United States. And I was working for Honeywell as a controller engineer. And then I saw this advertisement from a company called Computer Sciences Corporation and stuff. So I just one day applied, and next thing I know, I'm offered a job, and I am here in Washington. This was in the mid-70s. So I basically ended up with Computer Sciences Corporation, who at the time, we all know, was a federal contractor. Mostly at that time was all DOD work, 90% of was, and then over the period of time. And I stayed there practically 20 years. So really, my federal experience and everything was based out of Computer Sciences Corporation. And then I left and started my own, you know, and it led to being sold, and they retained me and acquired, went through three times, you know. Then Vector Research was bought by PEC Solutions, which subsequently was bought by Nortel Government Solutions. And at that point, I had decided to move on and say, you know, okay, enough is enough. And really, I wanted to retire. You know, 3 months of that, and I said, well, not yet. And I really personally, Jason, this is a good thing. To me, I'm very proud because I came as an immigrant to this country. So to me, in this mission, I was at the window one day, myself on the other side. Today, I'm here. I had my business. The country has been very good to me. And I said, I want to do public service. And I couldn't be in a better place to do that than serve as really a diplomat in this country. It's only, as they say, in the United States can that happen.
Well, that's a great story. I mean, just the fact that, you know, you came here as an immigrant and now you're helping other immigrants and other people coming to visit. But we are out of time, unfortunately. This has been fascinating in many ways. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our special guest today was Kirit Amin, the CIO of the Bureau of Consular Affairs in the State Department. Kirit, thanks so much for joining us.
And Jason, thank you very much, and privileged to be here today.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, worldwide on federalnewsradio.com. News and information for and about the federal decision maker. Weekday mornings 6 to 10, listen to the federal